Case number six, please. United States versus Kimberly Brown.
May it please the court, my name is Chris Kelly. I represent Kimberly Brown in this appeal from the sentence that was imposed upon her for her conviction of embezzling funds from a credit union. The district court increased Ms. Brown's offense level by 2 after concluding that she had abused a position of trust. It is our position that the information that was presented to the court through the pre-sentence report, which is the only source of information that the court had, plainly did not support the application of that enhancement to Ms. Brown.
Is it your view that Ms. Brown was merely an ordinary bank teller?
It's my view that there is no meaningful distinction in the record, in the evidence in the record, between a head teller and an ordinary bank teller. So I think the answer is yes, within the context of what a position of trust means.
Now, of course, she's able to access the vault at any time, and she doesn't have to be supervised, and she doesn't have to have oversight by others, right?
Well, I don't think the record tells us what degree of supervision she has. It is true that she has access to the vault that other tellers do not have, but I don't think the record tells us what degree of supervision she has when she is transferring money from the vault to the teller drawers.
So if I thought that her position involved more unsupervised duties and more discretion than the average bank teller, I would not be borne out by the record. Is that fair?
I think it would be correct to say that she has more duties than an ordinary teller. I don't think that the record bears out that she had less supervision than an ordinary teller.
How was she allowed to change that key then?
According to the pre-sentence report, she came to work one day and didn't have her key with her, so she asked to borrow the master key. When she borrowed the master key, she simply exchanged the master key for a different key so that key would no longer open her teller drawer.
So the bank couldn't get into her drawer.
Right, but I think an ordinary teller could have done the same thing. I don't think there's a difference between a head teller and an ordinary teller.
Wasn't she being considered to go to the mortgage department?
She was being considered for the mortgage department, sure, but that had not happened, and
but she was being considered.
Sure.
So she obviously had more access.
I'm not sure I see a correlation between being considered for a promotion and...
Because they were trying her out. She was just breaking somebody else in to her old job.
She was training another head teller, yeah.
Yeah, so that she could take the other job.
Right.
Now, if the lawyer didn't even make an objection to the enhancement, seems pretty good indication there that there was no merit to an objection. And
I don't think so.
The government then doesn't have an opportunity or a need, really, to present additional evidence on the issue. That's the problem.
Well, whether there's an objection or not, the government still has the burden of proof at a sentencing hearing.
Sure, but if there's no, say, the abuse of trust enhancement applies, and the defense lawyer says, we agree it does, I don't think the judge wants to sit and listen to another hour's worth of testimony on the details of her job responsibilities compared to somebody else.
Well, the judge nonetheless has an independent obligation to determine whether the evidence that is presented meets the government's burden of proof. Even if the defense doesn't object, the law still requires the judge to determine that the government met its burden of proof. And I think that the evidence before the court did not meet the government's burden of proof, because there is no evidence that Ms. Brown had the kind of discretion that this court talks about in the Tio Yanko case. There's no evidence that she was authorized to expend any of the bank's funds. There is no evidence that she engaged in the kind of complex situation-specific decision-making that Tio Yanko says characterizes a position of trust.
Yeah, but 3B13, the abuse of position, trust, or use of special skill application note, says for the enhancement to apply, the position of public or private trust must have contributed in some significant way to making to facilitating the commission or concealment of the offense by making the detection of the offense or the defendant's responsibility for the offense more difficult. Here, she made the detection of the offense impossible by changing the keys.
But again, it wasn't her position as head teller that allowed her to change the key. She simply came to work. She said, "I forgot my key. Can I borrow the master?" They let her. And while she borrowed it, she exchanged it for a different key. I don't see how an ordinary teller could not have done the same thing.
Well, would they have given the master key to an ordinary teller, do you think?
I don't know how else the teller's going to get into her cash drawer.
Well, that's the thing. You don't know that here.
And it's the government's burden of proof.
You don't know.
I understand that. It's also the government's burden
of trust. They trusted her, and she had the authority to go beyond. They didn't give anybody else that.
The two concepts don't mean the same thing. The two concepts don't mean the same thing. I mean, you can trust me. That doesn't mean that I occupy a position of trust.
You're not getting my key.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No one said it was.
So I guess my position is that Tio Yanko, I think, is pretty clear in saying that simply because somebody has some job duties or some responsibilities or even some amount of discretion doesn't mean that they occupy a position of trust. There has to be complex situation-specific decision-making that isn't dictated by an established protocol. There is absolutely no evidence in this record to suggest that there was not an established protocol. And in fact, the reason they discovered this crime is that an accountant saw that there had been what he considered to be an unusually large cash transfer or cash amount in her teller drawer, and they decided to look into it. That suggests to me that there is a protocol, that there are certain amounts of money that are supposed to be in the teller drawer, and when there's too much, you're exceeding an established protocol, and your supervisor investigates. That suggests to me that there is a lot of supervision.
They trusted her so much that they never audited her, did they?
I don't know if that has anything... What they said was they didn't audit the cash drawer and the vault
and
at
the vault.
Same
exactly
time.
Exactly right.
Whether that has anything to do with trusting her or simply negligent credit union practices.
Do they do that to the janitor, too?
I don't know. There is nothing in the record that tells us any comparative...
He had a position.
It doesn't tell us anything in the record about the kind of supervision they give a head teller as opposed to the supervision they give an ordinary teller as opposed to the supervision they give a janitor.
There's no rule against us using common sense or logic.
We always appreciate it when the court uses common sense, Your Honor. But
and logic.
And the rules of law. And Tio Yanko tells us what the rule of law is, and the judge didn't follow it here. Thank you. Do you have another question, Your Honor?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Mullen Dowdle. I'm an assistant United States attorney for the Western District of Wisconsin. I'd like to first address the waiver argument that we made in our brief. It is the government's position that Ms. Brown waived her objection to the adjustment for the role of the offense in this case. The PSR put Ms. Brown and her counsel on notice of the abuse of trust position adjustment. The court gave counsel 2 weeks to file written objections. There were a couple clarifications filed. There were no written objections with regard to the abuse of trust position. At the sentencing hearing, the district court specifically asked Ms. Brown and her counsel if they had read the PSR. They indicated they had. The district court again asked, "Do you have any objections?" They indicated they did not.
Let me ask you something, Mr. Dowdle. Is it possible that we have forfeiture here rather than waiver?
It is possible, Your Honor. The government has argued that under the Staples, Fudge, and Harris line of cases, that in this case, Ms. Brown was specifically put on notice, and her counsel put on notice of the role in the offense adjustment. Now, Ms. Brown, in her reply brief, has cited to Gongos, which was a case in which at least the PSR had recommended an adjustment. There's no indication as to whether or not the district court in that case went through the type of calculation that the district court did in this case.
Let me tell you what I worry about. I worry that if we say this is waiver, then we might be saying that every time a PSR is issued, that gets knowledge, and that would be waiver. You know, normally silence is forfeiture, and an affirmative statement, would be waiver.
I agree, Your Honor.
Yeah.
The slight difference here is the district court in this case did go through the calculation again in court.
Do you think it's necessary to decide here whether it's waiver or forfeiture?
Well, the government feels compelled under Staples and Fudge and Harris to argue to this court that there is a credible waiver argument and that Ms. Brown did waive this objection. However, we certainly argue that there was no plain error. Not only was Ms. Brown the head teller, she had evidence in the PSR again, because, of course, there was no evidence brought up at the sentencing hearing. She was hired in 1997, I believe, as a teller. She was promoted to head teller in 1999. A key responsibility that she had as head teller not only was access to the vault, which the record shows ordinary tellers did not have access to that vault, she also had the authority to transfer money from the vault to the teller drawers, which, again, the PSR said ordinary tellers did not have that authority. She used that ability to transfer money, that the trust that the credit union put in her, to conceal her crime and steal over $44,000 over 3 or 4 years. So it's not just access to the keys that was discussed earlier, but it's also the ability to transfer the money that she really used to conceal her crime. The Tijanko case that Mr. Kelly refers to, that there was a hotel clerk, this court found that that person did have a position of trust in that. There is no requirement that the government show that the person had the ability to expend funds on behalf of the organization. The case we cited, Cruz and Hernandez, make it clear that it's simply enough that there is some level of trust put into that employee. It is not required under Hernandez, for example, that the person have unfettered discretion to transfer money or to expend money. The district court did not commit plain error in this case, and therefore the court should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. With regard to the waiver issue, I don't know how this court could distinguish this case from Miyango's. In that case, the pre-sentence report recommended an increase in the offense level based on role in the offense. There was no objection made in the district court, and yet this court held that the failure to object to that recommended adjustment involved forfeiture and not waiver. I don't see this as a waiver case. There certainly wasn't any intentional decision not to raise a known issue in this case. With regard to the merits, it just isn't the standard that the government represents that there has to be some level of trust. The standard in 3B1.3 is that an employee must have substantial managerial discretion. The record here does not bear out that she had managerial discretion at all. It doesn't bear out that that discretion was substantial. It merely shows that she was able to, or a part of her job duties involved, moving money from a vault to a cash drawer. It doesn't say that she was unsupervised in that, or that she had unfettered decision making, or was subject only to nominal supervision. Without that information in the record, the court committed clear error and plain error by applying the abuse of trust enhancement.
Thank you for your help.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.